Well, good evening, everybody. My name is David Litt. I'm in charge of sales and marketing for Purium. Happy tax day or unhappy tax day, but if you got a home-based business like Purium, at least it's a little less unhappy for you. But tonight we've got our owner and founder, David Sandoval, going to be talking about GMOs, genetically modified organisms, a really important health topic. And so looking forward to listening in myself and hearing the information. This is a relevant topic, no matter who you are, no matter where you live. But Dave's on the island of Kauai, and that has a special place in the GMO fight. Kauai and Maui, a big wrestling match going on between the processed food companies and the local folks. And so I'm going to turn the call over to Dave to share a little bit about what's going on in Hawaii and, more importantly, what GMOs are and how they can affect your health and your body and why it's important that we don't have any GMOs in any of our products. So our owner and founder, he's the author of the Green Foods Bible, and they're going to be sharing tonight about GMOs, David Sandoval.
Well, good evening, David, and good evening, everybody. Want to thank you for taking time out of your busy lives to be with us tonight. This is a weekly gathering. We come together every week to discuss the issues that are important to us and to get in-depth into some of the reasons why Purium exists, some of the things that motivate me as the owner. As the Meet the Owner call, I want you to know who it is you're connecting to, what it is you're connecting with. And just to be totally certain that you understand, you're connecting with someone who is passionately dedicated to a cause. And that cause is very clear to me. The cause is to save humanity, to save your children, your grandchildren, and your grandchildren's grandchildren, so that this incredible, incredible proliferation of unprecedented diseases that are afflicting humankind are absolutely tied to our environment and to the food that we eat, and sometimes to both. And that's never more evident than we talk about genetically modified organisms. Now, we always need to get historical perspective. So you have to understand that there was already humans' advancement technologically had outstripped his ability to adapt physiologically. We ate essentially the same food for 40,000 years. The only slight exception was the introduction of grains and of farming and of herded animals or domesticated animals, but yet we were still eating 100% pure food that was free of all types of what we find in food today. Artificial colors, artificial flavors, artificial sweeteners. We're talking about even irradiated ingredients is a fairly new thing that is horrible, that they finally realized was horrible and stopped doing. And again, historical perspective is so important. So we're going to talk about genetically modified organisms. And in farming, there was always selective breeding. If you had one broccoli that was larger than the others, you would take the seeds from that head and you would perpetuate larger-headed broccoli. If you had corn that was sweeter or had neater rows or grew bigger, then you would select those kernels and grow a crop of those, and they would be predominantly larger, neater, sweeter corn. And this type of selective breeding took place for a long, long time. And it actually improved the quality and the consumption of fruits and vegetables as they became more tasty and more palatable and had less fiber. You see, most of the selective breeding of fruits and vegetables was to reduce the amount of fiber so that the amount of chewing necessary to extract the flavor and the nutrients was reduced. And so that should not be confused with genetically modified organisms. Hybriding and crossbreeding should not be confused with genetically modified organisms. Hybriding and crossbreeding is where you might come up with a fruit that's unique. You know, a combination between a peach and a plum, you know, or something like that. That's just combining pollens. And that's been done also for many, many years, and there's nothing dangerous about that. What started to happen is there started to be a reduction in the number of foods that were offered. At the turn of the century, 115 years ago, there were more than 200 varieties of apples that were sold and grown in the United States, and today that's fewer than 10. From 200 to 10. So we had one danger, and that was the reduction in the variety of food that we had access to, and variety always meant that we had a variety of foods, meant we had a variety of nutrients, phytonutrients, and earth elements. And the greater variety of foods that we had as hunters and gatherers, then we had this amazing net cast over. Well, we don't know exactly what is making us healthy, but we know that we're having a little bit of everything throughout the year, that we're going to get those some things that are really important, if that makes any sense. But when we began to reduce the number of apples and the number of vegetables and the number of fruits and the number of everything down to those few that could be easily grown and distributed and recognized, then that was a danger. But it's nothing, nothing, nothing compared to genetically modified organisms. Now, genetically modified organisms, I am not going to pull any punches, are an attempt to control you. Genetically modified organisms are an attempt to tax you in ways that you never knew were even possible. See, controlling food is something that people have been trying to do from the beginning of time. And so I want to just tell a little story very quickly. And I always ask people, do you know why Jesus was born in a manger? And they always say, because there weren't any hotel rooms. Well, that's the right answer. But the real answer is because the Romans were conducting a census. And the Romans regularly conducted these census to make sure that they knew how many citizens they had. And the reason it was so important to know how many citizens they had was because they needed to collect a tax for each citizen. If they short-counted the citizens, they would be short-changed in their taxes, and they did not want that. And so the Romans set up this system whereby food was centrally collected and then distributed by the government. And, as you might imagine, based upon the number of people that were reported in the census, there would be a requisite amount of food distributed to that city or to that region. And if you didn't pay it, your taxes, if you paid 10% fewer taxes, you got 10% fewer food, and your people became hungry. And so again, the Romans taxed you and controlled food. If you didn't pay taxes, you didn't get food. Now remember that thought, because today there are new Romans. The new Romans are those who want you to pay a tax every time you eat. And you ask, well, what does that mean? I pay for food. I go to the store and I buy food, and then I pay the tax on the food, and that's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is independence. Are you able to gain food independence? Now, how would you do that? Living in a city, you may not think about it, but if you have a little bit of dirt, you might. Because you could grow your own food. Isn't that a novel concept? Well, once everyone did. Well, if you grew your own food, here's how it works. You grow some tomatoes, and you buy tomato seeds. You buy them from a neighbor, or you buy them from a seed company, and then you plant them. And when your tomatoes grow, you eat most of them, but you save a few. And you take the seeds, you dry them out, and you save them for the next season. And then you don't buy seeds in year number two. You plant your own seeds. And by the way, those second-generation seeds taste a little bit better. They grow a little bit stronger, more adapted to their environment, as you might imagine. But then you get to the third and fourth generation. By the time you get to the fourth generation, you now have got a perfectly adapted food to its environment, and generations 4 through 7 are considered magical, the best tasting foods you could grow. However, what if the food that you grew, when you took those tomato seeds and dried them and tried to plant them, what if they did not grow? What if they would never grow again? Well, that's what's happening to our food. Imagine food that has been rendered with a genetically modified organism called a terminator gene. The terminator gene will allow a seed to germinate, but will not allow the seeds that come from the second generation to germinate. You give birth, the plant gives birth to an infertile offspring. Don't we want plants that give birth to strong offspring so that we could give birth to strong offspring? Consuming plants that cannot give birth to strong offspring might just endanger our offspring. Has anybody thought of that? And so the terminator gene is just one of the insidious genetically modified organisms that they're putting into plants that are not plants, that are actually diseases that could come from an animal or even a human or a fish or a tree, perhaps, that's not related to that plant. And they create a diseased gene pool. That's right. They purposely create a genetic problem within the plant. Genetic modification is genetic weakening and destruction on many levels. And so when you look at genetically modified foods, everybody talks about Roundup and that connection. I'm going to go there in just a moment. But you have to understand more things besides just Roundup when it comes to GMOs. And terminator genes allow a company to make you a slave to them, that every time you want to eat, and of course, even if you buy it from a farmer who sold it to a store, every time that farmer wants to grow food, they must buy the seed from a company that could demand a ransom for that seed, charge any price they want. And that farmer will never grow second, much less fourth or seventh generation food that would taste amazing and be totally acclimated to its soil. That's never going to happen again if these people have their way. Now, what about the other side of the coin? What about the other types of genetically modified organisms? Well, again, I want you to understand that a genetically modified organism, you have to break it down genetically. Our genome. Imagine that they don't allow us as humans, they don't want us to have stem cell therapy. They say that there's something inherently wrong with that, that we're messing with nature. Yet genetically modified organisms go way beyond stem cell manipulation to heal a human. They actually go to the manipulation of the very ribonucleic acid, the RNA, which is the DNA of plants. And they will create, again, a frankenfood. A frankenfood is a food that looks like a food. It might even taste like a food. But it's not going to digest like a food. It's not going to nourish you like a food. But more importantly than that, what it might wreak in our environment, a cascade of genetic mutations that might ultimately weaken not only our ecosystem, but the humans that rely upon it for their survival. And do you know that there has not been sufficient or publicly published testing showing the repercussions of introducing these ecologically, potentially ecologically dangerous organisms into a delicate system that is already suffering for the potential effects of global warming, chemicals in our atmosphere, and the reduction of our gene pool? So this onslaught against food is, it really is nothing more than an attempt to control food, and by controlling food, control you. So I'm going to tell you another side of the genetically modified food fight that you probably never knew about, and that's alfalfa. See, farmers use alfalfa as the cheapest source of manure available. When you plant alfalfa, its root systems goes deep, 30, 40 feet, and they're hair-thin roots, and they go into, literally, into stone and dissolve stone and bring minerals up into the topsoil that have been missing. So planting alfalfa reaches deep into soil and restores the topsoil because alfalfa is one of those mineral-rich foods on the planet. But more importantly than that, there is a parasitic and yet a symbiotic relationship between a soil organism called ribosium and the roots of alfalfa. The ribosium bacteria absorb nitrogen in order to grow from the soil that the roots could not. And because it becomes biologically active nitrogen, when those bacteria die, and they grow and die very rapidly, they make nitrogen bioavailable not only to the alfalfa, but they make it available to the soil. So there's an effect called green manure, whereby growing alfalfa restores nitrogen and balances the pH of soil. And that's what all chemical fertilizers are meant to do. That's what manure is meant to do. And so this is called green manure. You don't have to haul it in. You just have to plant some seeds. Alfalfa grows 100 years. So as long as you have one alfalfa field, you can keep cutting off the tops and creating green manure for other fields. It's amazing. So the bottom line is that they have now passed a law that is allowing alfalfa to be genetically modified. Because alfalfa is not an annual but a perennial, it doesn't live 1 year, it lives 100 years. That's why it's called the father of all food. We are messing with the father of all food. We're messing with nitrogen fixation. We're messing with green manure. We're messing with the cornerstone of inexpensive organic food, and they know it. Of inexpensive organic beef, and they know it. Of inorganic expensive anything. Of inexpensive organic anything, I meant to say. And they know it. And they went for the jugular, and nobody, I didn't mean the jugular, they went for the Achilles heel because nobody was looking. We protected other things, but we didn't think about that. And now, with the advent of GMO alfalfa, this has already happened that China has rejected the alfalfa from the United States because what they said was non-GMO was GMO. Because when alfalfa blows in the air, it will cross-pollinate other alfalfa fields that are 10, 20, 30 years old. It is a disaster playing out in organic farming. And so I know that no one has fought harder than our native sons on the Hawaiian Islands. We've got on Maui and Kauai, we've got movements, marches that have gone from one end of the island to the other. There's battles being played out in Middletown politics that are never before seen, with $100 million, billion-dollar companies coming in trying to influence people. And they point to one or two successes that supposedly are successes that are actually not successes at all. They point to a rice in Africa that has 5% more beta-carotene. Well, how about just giving them 5% more rice? You know, the bottom line is they talk about papayas on Maui that had a disease and all of a sudden they could grow papayas again because genetically modified organisms. Well, guess what? There's other answers. There's other answers besides that. That's just like saying, I know how to take away your pain. I'm going to shoot you. You're not going to feel any pain anymore. I have a great anti-aging cure. I could stop you from aging. Let's kill you. It stops you from aging, but it's not the answer you were looking for. So they point to one or two successes, and they don't tell you about the thousands of failures. And the experiment, again, is being played out on our children. And so the Roundup story, just so you know, what is this all about? Well, I'm going to blow your mind. This is Are you ready? This is about cheap Mexican labor. You see, if you're a farmer, your enemy are weeds. And the way you get rid of weeds is you hire people to walk up and down the rows of your food, and they pull the weeds out. That's what they do. And so, one, the anti-immigration people got together, and got together with the GMO people. And they said, hey, let's get together, and we're going to say the best way to make sure that farmers don't eat a bunch of illegal aliens is to make sure that they don't need their labor. We'll create a chemical solution to a human, you see, a historically human solution will become chemical. And so they created this stuff called Roundup. And Roundup kills anything that grows in the soil. The problem is corn and soybeans also grow in the soil, and so the Roundup killed them too. But if they could fool the Roundup into not recognizing these as plants, if they could put genes in them that made them look more like an animal, then the Roundup wouldn't kill them. Isn't that genius? And the only way to do that, the only way to make the gene actually stick, is to make it part of a disease so it keeps growing and proliferating. And so they use disease genes from, again, animals and humans or other, you know, different species of plants that were not from that environment, that were perhaps invasive species, species that had a different characteristic, and they somehow patched them into, modified, as they say, or created a Frankenfood. Upon doing this, the Roundup would not kill them, so they could spray the Roundup on everything. But here's the problem. Do you know that the weeds are now Roundup resistant? That's right. We now have weeds that are Roundup resistant. That means that they're now experimenting on the island of Kauai for the next generations of Roundup, the next generations of genetically modified organisms. Because what was supposed to be the perfect solution, something that was going to, you know, last forever, hasn't even lasted 2 decades before you see the weakness in their plan. And I've got a question for you. This is the real serious question that needs to be answered. If a car seat comes out and a baby's injured in that car seat, just one baby dies because that car seat wasn't perfect, that car seat gets recalled. That company gets sued, and nobody will ever buy that car seat again. Here's the problem. Why is it that these companies that are trying to grow this food, why don't they react that same way? Why don't they go, oh, you know what? If there's evidence that this food might harm people, if there's protests, if our very consumers, if the very people we're trying to sell to are marching in the streets saying that we don't want you, and yet we're forcing it on them? And yet we're going to go to court. We're going to say, I don't care that you don't want to eat it. We're going to hide it on our label. We're not even going to disclose. We're not even going to allow you to disclose that this food is non-GMO. Excuse me, that this food is GMO. We have to prove that it's non-GMO. We have to put a special label, a special tag, a special verification that says we're non-GMO. Put all the onus on us. Isn't, you know, it's almost like if it was said everybody's guilty until proven innocent, right? You have to prove that you're innocent. All food is guilty of being GMO until you prove yourself innocent. That's upside down. You have to be innocent until proven guilty. So all food should be non-GMO, and then it should be labeled if it is GMO. And then what's going to happen, and you know what's going to happen, is people are going to step up and they're going to reject that food that's GMO. They're not going to buy it, and the people are going to have to take it off of the market. If we have a choice, we're going to reject it. But they're not giving us that choice. This is a serious issue. Now, Purium is not in the business of creating political campaigns. Purium is not in the business of, you know, of that, but we are social activists. How could we say that we're not? Because we're out there trying to help society to lose weight. We're out there trying to help society to eat clean and green and to overcome the maladies that are the end result of a lifetime of eating improper food. And that improper food up till now, as we said, was, you know, artificial colors, sweeteners, and hydrogenated oils, you know, white bread and white sugar, things that we could see, things that we could identify, things that we could avoid if we want to, if we have a choice, if we're smart, educated, and intelligent, and self-loving, if we have a choice to make, we're going to make it. But what if we don't have that opportunity to make the choice because we are not revealed, the truth is not revealed to us? So I want to remind you that we are a 100% non-GMO company. We are a 100% non-GMO company. Is every product labeled as non-GMO? Not yet. That's a process that takes time through administrative and paying, you know, paying the VIG over to the, you know, to the non-GMO mafia so you can get your labels, you know, and that's just a joke. But the bottom line is that, you know, we have got every week, we've got more and more products being certified, but the organic is the key. Non-GMO is nice. It is. Organic is even better. And so organic is guaranteed non-GMO. So look at all of our organic products. Those are non-GMO. Look at all of our products. They're non-GMO. And I want you to know that that's a standard we've had for a long time. We've had it forever. We'll never change. And all of the, I'm going to tell you one little last story on GMOs. I love this story. I think we have enough time. We have 2 minutes. I'll tell it fast. Did you know that Cheerios are now non-GMO? And if you take an old box of Cheerios, they had 100% of the RDA of every nutrient. 100% of the RDA of every nutrient. And now they have 5% of this, 7% of that, 14% of this, 11% of this, 2% of that. And the reason why is because when they went to buy the nutrients that they usually use to put in to guarantee that 100%, they couldn't find any that were not genetically modified. Every multivitamin out there, every fortification, every time you looked on the box and it says with niacin and thiamine and riboflavin and, you know, and all of these nutrients, B1, B2, B3, B6, all of that, you better watch out. You better watch out. And so you got to choose a company you could trust. You've got to choose a company that's educated, aware, and on the cutting edge, the one that's fighting for you every single day. Now, I'm not in the business of fighting Monsanto. That's not my job. My job is to fight for you. And fighting for you means giving you the option to come and shop with us and be guaranteed that we've got an umbrella for you. And there's lots of room under the umbrella for you to come and to shop at our superfood superstore. And that's the umbrella that protects you from all of that other stuff. And we're going to educate you so you begin to make better decisions. But it's not my job to fight Monsanto. That's the job of you. Your job is to go out and through your buying decisions to make sure that you buy organic, to make sure that you buy non-GMO, that you get on the phone, not to Monsanto, but to the companies that make your favorite products. If all of you got on the phone to the companies that make your favorite products and said, I can't buy it anymore because you're GMO, and until you prove to me you're not, I just can't buy it anymore. That's what I want you to tell them. And when you do, we're going to change the world because they're going to listen. GMO Company, Inc., they're not going to listen. But the companies that buy from GMO, Inc., they're going to listen. The people who make your chips and your breakfast cereal, the people who make your kids' snacks, they're going to listen. So you need to become an activist. You need to not call Monsanto or Beatrice or Archer Daniel Midland, they're not going to listen to you. They're going to listen to the companies that they're selling stuff to. That's who they're going to listen to. So my name is David Sandoval. I'm one of the owners and founders of Purium Health Products. And as is our custom, I'm going to invite you all to say hello, mahalo, and aloha, arrivederci, and ciao, whatever it is that you would like, as we celebrate this family of like-minded and well-intentioned people And we're going to change the world, but we're going to change the world by changing ourselves and become an example of what we want the world to become. And people are going to look at us and they say, if she could do it, if he could do it, so could I. That's how we're going to change the world. One person at a time, with the first person being us. Aloha, mahalo, and thank you once again for everything.
Here we go. Okay,
see you later,
thank you, David. Thank you, David.
Powered by Curie.
Thank you,
powered by Curie.
Thank you.
Shalom.
See you Saturday.
Shalom.
Shalom.
Thank you.
Hello.
Thank you.
Aloha.
Hello.
Hey,
Hama. Mahalo, David. I love.
Thank you, David.
David.
Thank you, David.
Shalom, David.
Great.